Thank you so much for listening today to the show. This is the Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, and my name is Peter Alton, your host for today and the coming weeks. Welcome back to the Diabetes Show. This is an extremely special week, so thank you for joining me. What is so special about this week, you may well be asking? Well, it is the final week of January, of course. That is goes without saying. I don't know where January's gone. I mean, it's just flown past. I'm actually recording this on the 25th of January, so that's exactly 1 month since Christmas Day. Where has that gone to? Time flies by, and indeed it does fly by, because we are celebrating a birthday this week, and it's not just any old birthday. Okie dokes, it's not 1 year since we started doing the Diabetes Show. It's not 2 years since we started doing the Diabetes Show. It is 3 whole years since we started the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. And let me tell you something, that's been quite a journey. It's been a journey of great joy at times. It's been a journey of hardship at times. Definitely hard work. Late nights, people letting me down at the last minute, having to improvise, having to learn how to do editing on the spur of the moment. Some of you might have noticed that in some of the shows that I've done. It's been challenging, but it has been rewarding. And today we have 156 different shows to show for it. Hopefully you are aware of that. Hopefully you're aware that you can see, or rather you can listen to, you will be seeing some, because some we do put up on video as well, but you can hear all the previous shows on UK Health Radio's website. You can get there by going to www.bit.ly/diabetesradio, or go to ukhealthradio.com. And when you get to my page, remember there's two, there's either the Diabetes Show or there's the Foot Health Show, but the Diabetes Show itself has 156 previous show, 155 previous shows. This is 156th one. All different topics, and you can scroll through. I'm afraid you have to scroll through 6 at a time, so it can take a bit of a while. I am in the process of indexing them so that you can have easy access via our website at www.undefeated.org. And then you should hopefully be able to link in to whichever one, whichever topic tickles your fancy. So we've done that number of shows. I intend this going on for many years to come. And hopefully I've been talking with somebody which I'm thinking we may well have on board as a co-presenter. So watch this space for that. And that would be a fantastic for us to be able to continue providing great quality of radio, great quality interviews for you without me burning myself out. So I am really looking forward to bringing the show in possibly even new format for you, but certainly with some fantastic things for you to be able to hear here on UK Health Radio. So I am, this show, going to just very briefly refresh your memories on the diabetes sweet spot, if you haven't heard of that before. And I am going to be sharing some things later on, which I think are really critical for you to get into that. I'm going to be sharing some of the top things that I can remember people saying on this show from some of the great guests I've had. There's going to be, I think it's 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 or 8 different guests that we're going to have, just giving little tips on the show today. And I think you'll find that those highlights are going to whet your appetite to go back and have a look for some of those shows that they were on and to listen to what they had to say. So the diabetes sweet spot is the safest possible place you can be in with your diabetes, whatever type of diabetes you may have. And it's a fluid state, so it changes. As you change, so it does also. So you might have particular HbA1c at the moment and feel that you're safe, but you could get to a safer place. You might be able to get a bit more knowledge and therefore be safer. You might be able to become a bit more aware of your own risks, particularly with your feet, but other risks as well. And therefore, you're in that safer place because you're aware of those risks. And then you might be prompted to take some actions, maybe to do more exercise, maybe to have a diet, maybe to look after your feet more. All of those things help put you into that sweet spot space, that safe place. And I really, that's what this show is all about. It's about trying to help you to stay safe with your diabetes. And if possible, if you've got type 2, if possible, to get rid of your diabetes. But certainly to live more safely with it. And that means getting better blood sugars. Just think about it. Wouldn't it be great if on your next birthday, you're able to celebrate not just your birthday, but also able to celebrate your HbA1c being so much lower than it was a year before? That's something I'd really like to encourage you to consider doing, aiming for your HbA1c to be better at your next birthday. And on that note, we're going to play a song, which is a birthday song. And then after that, we will get into the first interviews that I have prized out from other shows over the past year. So enjoy this song by the band Altered Images, and it is called, appropriately, Happy Birthday. This is Peter Alton on the Diabetes Show, and that was the Altered Images and the song Happy Birthday. And if you joined us during that song, then you may well be wondering, well, why is he playing a happy birthday song? Well, it is because this week is a very special week. And why is it a special week? Well, it's not our first birthday. It's not our second birthday. It's our third birthday of doing the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. That's right, we've been doing it for 3 years, 156 shows, I believe. Wow, that's been a lot of time spent putting into bringing you news about diabetes, bringing you some of the great brains behind the advances in technology and treatment ideas for diabetes. So, as it's that special day, I thought I need to have a bit of a birthday party. Okay, it's not very easy to have a wild time by yourself doing this this recording, but I thought at the same time it's worth playing the song to get in the spirit of things. We've got a lot of interviews to get through today. I've shared earlier that I'm going to be bringing together little snippets from the previous shows, some of the ones that I feel would be most helpful to you. And the first ones actually that I want to share is with my best friend, Tina. Now, earlier on, I talked a little bit about the diabetic sweet spot. And one of the things that I think is critical to being able to live in that safe place is to have somebody in your life that we call a sweet spot buddy. And I asked Tina what sort of qualities, characteristics you should look for in someone when choosing who will be your sweet spot buddy. What would your advice be if someone is at this point, they haven't got that person in their life, mm-hmm. and they're thinking of approaching someone, choosing somebody to be their sweet spot buddy. Mm-hmm. Have you got any advice on who they should think about choosing, the type of person? Or
yeah, I always say, you know, when you're choosing someone to hold you accountable, you want to have somebody that you respect. You've got to have somebody that you respect, somebody that you look up to, because then when it gets tough and they're stretching you, that's what makes the difference. But you know, if you're we have this proverb in Ghana, it says, you know, two black pots sitting down, or two black, you know, the pot and the kettle, you know, they're both black. Makes sense. So birds of the same feathers flock together. If you're lousy, you don't take much, you're not bothered, you know, how you're doing. If you're not bothered by yourself and that kind of stuff, and you choose the sweet spot buddy who's also the same as you, you're asking for trouble, because like, where's the change gonna happen, right? So never choose somebody who's like you. Always choose somebody that you, number one, you have great respect for, number two, that you look up to. And because that is what they're supposed to be there to challenge you, to stretch you, to question some of the choices that you're making, right? And don't forget that you're choosing this person for a good reason. You're choosing them because you need that. If you were able to give yourself that, you wouldn't be choosing them. So don't forget the reason, the purpose why you're choosing that person. Why are they there? They're there to help me when it gets tough. So when it gets tough, if I respect them, I will listen to them. If I look up to them, I will listen to them. If I know they love me and I trust them, and they, you know, they, I love them, I trust them. You know that what they share with you, they're sharing from a place of love, from a place, you know, and you trust that actually they're sharing, you know, actually, you know, you can't eat that cake because they love you. And I remember at one point, the kids used to, this was ages ago, you know, the kids would be like, oh, daddy can have this and you have that. And I remember one point saying, you know, the fact that you love them doesn't mean you always have to take it, right? Because eating that and taking that all the time, you're eating yourself to death, right? And then what have you left those kids? Nothing, no dad. Right, because you have to tell them to stop. No, I'm not going to be able to eat that. And why was I able to do that or say that to you? You were able to receive that and change that because you knew I loved you, but not just that, but because you knew I was speaking the truth from a place of love. So it makes it, even though it's uncomfortable to receive those kind of, I guess, support, if you will, or challenge, but because you know this person has my interest at heart, it makes it easy. You'd go away, you think about anything. Actually, yes, there's truth there. So those, in my opinion, those are the three things. You've got to have respect for them. You've got to look up to them, and you've got to trust them that whatever they're telling you, that they're actually telling you from the place of love.
Brilliant, brilliant.
And next up, I have two little helpers. And I'm going to start off by asking you, do you know that there are more than one different type of diabetes? What are they?
Type 1 and type 2.
Okay. And type 1 and type 2, what? Tell me a little bit about the difference. Do you know the difference?
So type 1 is where you're born with it and there's not yet. There isn't something to stop it. So it's where you have it for pretty much the rest of your life. But they are thinking of a cure. But diabetes type 2 is when you have too much sugar. I think it's something like that. And then you end up with diabetes, but there is a way to reverse it by going on a special diet. And the difference is that one of them is natural. No, not natural. One of them is sort of like your body that makes it happen. And then that's type 1. And type 2 is where you make it happen, sort of.
Oh, yes. Out of the mouth of babes there. Type 1 is where your body makes it happen. And type 2 is where you make it happen. Sort of. So true. If only more of us would take accountability for the fact that it is us that has made our type 2 diabetes happen. It hasn't just randomly happened to us. It is us. It is our lifestyles that has happened. So thank you very much there, children, for sharing that with us today. If type 2 is all about lifestyle and what you eat, what are some things that you shouldn't eat if you have type 2 diabetes?
Carbohydrates.
And carbohydrates. Sugar. Okay, give me the name of a carbohydrate.
Pasta, potato.
Oh, no, there's one I was going to say. You've given two. Pasta and potatoes. What about you?
Rice.
Another one. Very common one.
Bread.
Bread, okay. Yes.
Donuts.
Okay, donuts as well. Yes. All those things that taste so nice, yes. And it doesn't mean we can't have them, but we eat far too much of them. I know you too, definitely. I'm sure if there's a plate of donuts in front of you and we turned away, the plate of donuts would disappear. There'd just be a plate left. Yeah? And it's getting into the habit of eating the wrong things, too much food, and too much of the wrong food that can lead to us getting type 2 diabetes. So do you know who's listening to us on the radio?
People.
Well done. People. Probably animals as well. Pets are probably listening, but they won't understand. Hopefully the people will understand, don't you think?
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you. You can speak dog language.
Yeah.
Go on then.
Woof.
What does that mean?
It means woof.
Okay. Right. Let's just leave our listeners with one piece of advice, okay? So I'm going to ask you, what advice would you give them? Because the listeners are going to be mainly people with diabetes of one sort or another.
Maybe to keep an eye on what you're eating and not eat too many carbs.
Okay. What about you, young man? Have you got some advice?
Oh, yeah. Before you buy something, look at the carbohydrate and the sugar thing. And then check if it's a lot, then don't buy it. If it's not, buy it.
Okay, so you know quite a lot, you two, really. So there's no excuses going forwards. Yay!
I'm still no more allowed donuts. To often sweet.
You're not getting my sweet.
Yeah,
so.
I think that we can all occasionally indulge
like
in something
on a birthday.
Nice like that. But
I'm so lucky there's six of us in the family
but
for
not
every birthday.
Daily, which you two would try and get away with. Thank you very much for your time and your thoughts. Thank you.
Bye.
Keep healthy. So my next guest, someone special again, let her speak. Jazz, can you tell us a little bit about your experience of diabetes?
Yep. Hello, everybody. So I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in the year 2011 when I was age 11, just before I started secondary school. And it was a very big change for me to suddenly go from eating whatever I wanted without thinking about it to suddenly having to calculate all the carbohydrates and everything I was eating and drinking. So that was very hard. And for the first year of my diagnosis, well, since my diagnosis, I was on manual injections. So I was injecting two different types of insulin a day, Lantus and NovoRapid. And then after the first year, they moved me onto an insulin pump. And I've been on that for the past 5 years, and it has its ups and it has its downs, and there's always challenges and things that go right and things that go wrong. But yeah, and then recently at the start of 2018, as I was now officially an 18-year-old adult and could make my own decisions, I decided to go on to manual injections again and see how they go. So I've been on those for the past couple weeks, and yeah.
Okay, thank you. A very brief introduction there, just to yourself. This, by the way, listeners, is my family that I've been introducing you to. So you've heard them all now. I'm the latest one here. This is Jazz.
Yeah.
And probably more than any person, Jazz is probably the reason why I am who I am now. In so much as it was her diagnosis that led both myself and Tina to really decide to do something about diabetes in this world. So, Jazz, thank you for that. Listeners, you will be hearing from Jazz again, because she has got quite an interesting story with her diabetes, and I'm sure many of the ups and downs that she has faced and mentioned there we will explore in more detail in the future, because her experiences no doubt will help you. And likewise, as you know, I want to encourage you to phone in from time to time and to email in your questions and your experiences, because likewise I'm sure that she will be able to learn from people like you as well. So thank you for that time, and we will have you back on the show sometime soon.
Yep, thank you for having me.
So I guess the game was given away there, and you now know that those people were actually my family that I was interviewing. And there is a reason that I was interviewing them. The reason is that family can play a huge part in your walk with diabetes. They certainly have done in mine, and I believe that some of the lessons that they have learnt and some of the lessons that they've taught me can be helpful to you as well. So that was just a brief introduction to them in a nutshell. I promise it won't become the Alton show every single week. We won't have them on every week, but we will have from time to time, and particularly my wife Tina, who's involved with Undefeated, and also Jasmine, of course, with her type 1 diabetes. So let's move swiftly on to the next interviewee, and our next interviewee really doesn't need any introduction, because anyone who's listened to the show will have heard him on this show, I'm pretty certain, because not only is he featured in several of the main interviews, but also he has regularly been on the show giving us our type 1 diabetes tip of the week. And that, of course, is Dr. David Cavan. Dr. David Cavan, many of you will know from his books Reverse Your Type 2 Diabetes and also Take Control of Your Type 1 Diabetes, both very practical books that can help you with either of those types of diabetes to get better control of it. So welcome to the show, Dr. David Cavan.
So let's start with the basics. Can you please spell out the difference between what causes type 1 and type 2?
Okay, so I very much sympathise with your daughter's predicament, and in a sense, although type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes have certain things in common, including the name, they're actually very, very different conditions, and it would almost be easier if they were called different things, if they didn't both use the term diabetes. Because after all diabetes means... it derives originally from the fact that in both conditions you have sugar in the urine. You know, diabetes mellitus refers to passing sugar into the urine. So type 1 diabetes is a condition, an autoimmune condition, where the body's immune system destroys the cells that produce insulin, and so the person can no longer produce insulin. As far as we are aware, it has nothing to do with being overweight. It has nothing to do with particular lifestyles or particular diets. And as with many other autoimmune diseases that include rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, it could come completely out of nowhere. At the moment, it cannot be reversed, it cannot be cured, it has to be treated with insulin. And actually, when they're diagnosed, people with type 1 diabetes are often underweight, because weight loss is one of the first symptoms that you get. But they have to be managed with insulin, and they have to be on insulin for the rest of their lives. Type 2 diabetes is very different. Whereas type 1 diabetes generally affects children and young people, type 2 diabetes historically has affected older people from sort of middle age onwards, although now is occurring at much younger ages. And as I mentioned earlier, type 2 diabetes is very much related to modern day lifestyles. It tends to occur in people who are overweight, or you don't have to be significantly overweight. And what we now understand, it is very closely related to certain lifestyle behaviours that increase the risk. So those include being physically inactive and eating unhealthy foods are the major ones. But before, you know, people start, maybe people who are listening and they've got type 2 diabetes and they, you know, feel, well, that's some in some way pointing, you know, a finger at them that they've been lazy or they've been unhealthy. I don't see it that way at all. You know, it's estimated now there are over 400 million people in the world with diabetes. The vast majority have type 2 diabetes. If we go back 50 years, it was tens of million. Now, you know, 370 million people haven't suddenly decided to become unhealthy and eat the wrong foods. The big increase is a result of the environment that we're in, of the foods that are available, which are often very high in sugar and very high in calories, but also in the way, you know, our jobs are now very often spent sitting down at a computer all day. Yeah. At home, we sit down at computers all day. You know, we only have to go back a few decades, and it was very different.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I think that definitely clears that myth up then. The second myth I want to talk about is type 1 being more serious than type 2. And I wonder if perhaps you can tell the listeners the differences and similarities between why the blood glucose rises in type 1 and in type 2, and therefore from that point of view, why it's more short.
So in type 1 diabetes, there is a lack of insulin. Insulin is a hormone that controls the level of glucose or sugar in the bloodstream. And if you don't have insulin, then the level of glucose rises. And part of the seriousness of diabetes is the effect of that and those high glucose levels on the body, causing a number of different problems in the feet, in the eyes, in the kidneys, and so on and so forth. So that high glucose arises in type 1 diabetes because there's no insulin. In type 2 diabetes, you get the same problem of high levels of glucose in the bloodstream, but very often it's not because the body cannot produce insulin. Often there's a high level of insulin. The problem is the body cannot use insulin effectively. And so although the body is producing insulin, the blood glucose level still rises. It's as if the body becomes immune to the effect of insulin. And so type 1 is sometimes sort of more serious because you need insulin injections. You'll have gathered in type 2, because there is insulin and that's not the problem, you know, insulin injections is not probably the ideal treatment for type 2 diabetes. We can perhaps come on to that later on. So because you need to inject insulin right from the beginning in type 1 diabetes, then in some way you could think it is sort of more serious. It often occurs in younger people, so you know that is, if you like, more serious. I think what I would say is they're both potentially very serious conditions, because the corollary of that is if type 1 is a serious one, maybe type 2 is the milder form, and often that's what people are told, you know, it's a milder form of diabetes. But as you will well know, type 2 diabetes can be just as devastating as type 1. You can, with type 2 diabetes, get exactly the same complications. They're actually both potentially serious conditions.
Yeah. I think one of the things I would add to that as well, from my own experience of the patients that I see is that type 1, you know you've got it,
yeah,
or you die.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Type 2, you can live with it for 10 years without even knowing you've got it, and all the time it's doing that damage.
Absolutely right, and globally it's estimated that up to 50% of people with type 2 diabetes just don't even know they've got it.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything about it because you don't know.
That was Dr. David Cavan, who has become a very good friend of mine and who was explaining there about the differences between the causes of type 1 and type 2 diabetes. We're going to move on now to a question I put to another very good friend of mine, a colleague, a podiatric surgeon from America, called Dr. David Armstrong. And David Armstrong is a world-renowned expert on salvaging, healing up, if you like, diabetic wounds where other people would normally be led to just go down the amputation route. Him and his team are amazing at salvaging some of those limbs. And during one of our previous interviews, I put to him a scenario of a gentleman called Jim who had some minor problems at that point and asked him his opinion on that. So here's David Armstrong with his views.
Okay. All right. So just the other day, I saw this guy called Jim. Okay. And Jim had lost sensation. But not only that, he had some quite risky areas of hard skin. He hadn't got developed any wounds that would need your services at that point, but he had got these areas of skin, hard skin, which were really, really a problem in our eyes, but in his eyes, because he couldn't feel them, he'd got no concept of that risk at all.
Yeah.
We obviously told him that he was going to be at higher risk, but what would you say? I guess you see people at the other end of the scale, but in your mind, what do you think would be the good thing for us to be able to say to that a person like that?
Yeah, wonderful question. And you know, we see people at all ends of the scale. We certainly see people at very, very end stage as well with, you know, enormous problems. But for Jim, I would say, thank God you're here, because and of course we would want to explain what those hard areas of skin are. You know, you were alluding to it that you are an expert yourself in taking care of these. Don't sell yourself short on that end. And you, as you know, many of the complications of diabetes and especially diabetic foot, we compare them to a kind of a cancer in many ways. And as you know, when someone has had an amputation, they are their mortality is worse than most forms of cancer. When they have a wound, their life is also shortened in many cases, like a cancer. They have a doubled 5 or 10 year mortality rate, based on a number of studies. And when people have something like this, like you mentioned the gym has, there's also sort of a cancer analogy. If you want to think about it, you can allude to kind of like a breast lump in breast cancer. A breast lump is a sinister problem that's about to happen, potentially. It might not, but it's a sinister problem that might be caught by a breast exam, a self-exam, or an exam by a clinician. So too, what you're mentioning on the feet, these hard areas of skin, calluses, can be just like breast lump. That is a coming event that's casting its shadow, if you will, beforehand. These are wounds that are about to happen in a person with diabetes, especially if they have neuropathy. So a callus to someone with diabetes and neuropathy is the equivalent of a breast lump to someone who has who may be at risk for cancer. Make sense?
Makes sense. It's powerful analogy. And I suppose what doesn't make sense is the fact that if somebody found a lump on their breast, they're probably going to hot-tail it down to the doctors quickly, whereas if they've got diabetes and a callus.
I think about this all the time, Peter. But again, let's remember, the gift of pain. Now, you might say that a breast lump is also painless, but maybe we can learn from that because often it's painless. But we have done a great job in public health sense of educating the public about that and about the importance for this, maybe we need to take a lesson from that.
Thank you very much, David, for that. That was David Armstrong, Professor of Podiatric Surgery over in the USA, a great friend of mine and really an upward calling for all podiatrists to try to help out in this battle against amputations. And it scares me just the numbers of people who are losing limbs unnecessarily. It really pains me and makes me want to do more and more, spurs me on to do more and more to try and help you prevent you being one of the statistics. So please do go back and listen to some of David's other interviews that we've done, the full interviews that we've done. He's been on the show many times. He's a real supporter of both the work we do here and Undefeated, and just generally a global ambassador for prevention of amputations. So thank you, David. And that brings me to my next guest. My next guest is a gentleman who I've come to know through my work in raising awareness about diabetes and in my own personal walk with diabetes, actually. He is the man who has been behind the diet which I undertook to reverse my diabetes. Many of you have heard of the Newcastle Diabetes Reversal Diet, and we've had him on the show a couple of times. His work is amazing. He has really transformed things. I think he should be given a Nobel Prize for his work. And he is no other than, of course, Professor Roy Taylor. And I had the opportunity to ask Roy what I would say is a $6 billion question, which is, can you reverse diabetes? Or is a better term to call it remission? So let's hear it. So to speak, from the horse's mouth, and see what Professor Roy Taylor has to say about that.
The term reversal comes from the original work on the twin cycle hypothesis. And I described these twin cycles that were spinning, vicious cycles that caused the diabetes. I pointed out that if we could get them to spin in the reverse direction, the diabetes would be reversed. That's where the term reversal comes from. And so, yes, it has real meaning. I would use the term reversal out of preference for another reason as well, because it doesn't imply any time predictions. If someone has reversed their diabetes and got back to normal, that's here and now today.
Yeah.
They need to keep their weight off if it's going to stay reversed.
Yeah.
Now, the term remission is often used in other diseases, and so you might have leukemia, you might get remission from leukemia, and that's good. It sort of implies you're expecting it to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, to me, that gives a negative slant on this field, although, to be absolutely fair, it does underscore the importance of daily, weekly, monthly checking that your weight is remaining steady. So either term is entirely acceptable. You know that direct includes the word remission in its title, and that underscores this this choice. So go out and try and reverse your diabetes and achieve remission. We can put them into the same sentence.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. That's my thoughts exactly on that one. Quite frequently I get asked by people whether I think they should try the Newcastle diet. I think you've sort of covered this a little bit in the previous questions maybe, but is it your view that anyone with type 2 can benefit, however long they've had it, etc.?
Yes, with some caveats. There's a possibility, there's always a chance that the type 2 diabetes may return to normal. The longest duration person that I know of, having achieved this, had their diabetes for 24 years and was on tablets and has gone back completely to normal. However, there are one or two people who only had their diabetes apparently for a short time who don't completely go back to normal. So we know that on average, if you've had it only for a few years, you're more likely to respond than if longer term. But if a person has type 2 diabetes, as we said before, they've become heavier than their own constitution can cope with. They've become too heavy for the body. And they will feel better. They will feel 10 years younger if they lose the weight. Their blood pressure will be dramatically reduced. Their fats in the blood, the lipids in the blood, will also improve. So there are wider aspects to well-being than just reversing the diabetes. Even if a person doesn't manage to reverse it, if they feel much better from day to day, if they have a lower blood pressure, if they're taking less tablets, for instance, or even no longer taking insulin, then that's a major advantage, even though they may still have the diabetes. So it's possible for anyone to benefit from this approach. But winding back even further, there's a very basic point that I wouldn't want anyone to try this unless they were very clear in their own mind that they personally wanted it. There's got to be the motivation to do it. And so I wouldn't want to mislead people into saying, this is, you know, it's easy. Decide to do it. It's like deciding to wear a red shirt. You know, you just do it. That's fine. Well, no, this is something that requires planning. It requires support from the family. It requires a lot of effort. And if people really dislike their diabetes enough, they're likely to succeed. But the vital ingredient of motivation, I think, is worth flagging up at this point.
Thank you so much, Roy. And of course, since that little recording was done earlier in the year, your work is largely responsible for what has been adopted by the NHS now, where they're trying to lay out this opportunity for people to carry out this diet. I think they're allowing 5,000 people initially to get involved in it. So let's hope that that is as much of a success as all your trials have been with the direct study up in Scotland. So thank you so much for that. Right, we're going to listen to another song now before we close out the show after that. And the song that we're going to listen to, continuing on with the birthday theme, slightly different to the previous one, but actually of the same name, and that is going to be Stevie Wonder and Happy Birthday.
Set aside to show
So that's it. That's the end of our celebration of our happy birthday here on The Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio. Thank you so much for listening to us. And the show is pretty much at an end now. I just want to close out by saying, please do check out the previous shows that we've done. All one of them are accessible. You can go to them by looking on UK Health Radio's website, www.ukhealthradio.com, or you can get a quick link straight through to the page with all my shows on, which is at www.bit.ly/diabetesradio. Please do visit also our website at Undefeated. So that's www.undefeated, spelled with all E's, .org. And you'll hear more there about, or see more there about, what we can do to help you to minimize the risks of having complications with your feet as a person with diabetes. Those complications, of course, can be very, very sinister and very debilitating. And we are all about trying to make sure that you are able to continue doing the things that you love doing with your friends and loved ones for the rest of your life. Have a fantastic week, and thank you so much for listening again. And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Olsen with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. Remains is for me to say, have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot, living the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care, and God bless.